This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
John Kukla received his master's degree and PhD from the University of Toronto. From 1973 until 1990, he directed historical research and publishing at the Library of Virginia. He then followed up as curator and then director of the historic New Orleans collection. Most recently, he was the director of Red Hill, the Patrick Henry National Memorial in Charlotte County, Virginia. He now lives and writes in Richmond, the big capital city, and his new book just released is Mr. Jefferson's Women. John joins us on the long line from Richmond. Hey, John, how are you doing?
Doing well, Coy.
Thanks for spending some time with us.
Absolutely.
Exciting book. I tell you, it's got a buzz about it here. A lot of people are talking about it.
I guess.
So what's going on in your life, John, when you realize, boy, this is I'm going to write a book about women in the life of Thomas Jefferson?
Well, I was working on a book about the Louisiana Purchase that came out in 2003. I think it was about 98 or 99, I was at a conference, Southern Historical Association conference, and they were talking about the implications of the DNA testing, which had indicated that there was a biological link between males of Jefferson's family and at least one of the children of Sally Hemings. And people were trying to characterize what this relationship might have been. I turned to a person I was with in the audience and just said, you know, we're never going to know that much more about what that relationship might have been unless we knew more about Jefferson and women in general. And I was working on another book at the time, and when I finished it, I figured that I would be able to go to the library and find a book about a good, reliable book about Jefferson and women, because gosh, there's everything else that's been written about, the way from the major things like Jefferson and American politics, the Declaration of Independence, religion, all of those sorts of things, down to his copying machine and his design for a plow and Jefferson and wine and on. Well, it turns out that there really wasn't much of anything. You can go on the University of Virginia library website and access a big huge bibliography of everything published about Jefferson, books and articles since he died in 1826, and there were about 12 titles, of which there was only one book, and it was kind of old, and it certainly didn't address the things that I was curious about. So when I entered, mentioned this to my agent and editor, they said, "Well, that sounds pretty good. Go ahead." So what I tried to do was get at, and what I thought I could bring to the book, frankly, is that I've been doing Virginia history for a long time, and so I was hoping that I could get at the women and their lives and families from sources that were not exclusively Jefferson's own letters and perceptions and memories and such, because relationships, of course, are always at least two-sided. So, and I was able to do that to a pretty good degree, and I think it makes the book more interesting than it would be just to focus on close readings of Jefferson's own writings.
We're talking with John Kukla. His new book is Mr. Jefferson's Women, and he's coming to Charlottesville tomorrow. He'll be speaking at 3:30 at Kenwood near Monticello. And if you would like to attend, you are strongly encouraged to go to Monticello.org and register for this event, because it is going to be crowded. John, tell us about some of these women. Let's talk about some of these women in particular that you learned about in Jefferson's life. It certainly goes way beyond just the regular cast of women there, Maria Causeway or his wife who passed away, and Sally Hemings.
Right. Yeah, the first one, in fact, the structure of the book is fairly straightforward. I devote a chapter to each of the major, women in his life after sort of setting the stage of his youth and college. But the first woman is in fact Rebecca Burrell, who later marries into the Ambler family, and in fact one of her daughters later marries Chief Justice John Marshall. But Rebecca was about 16 when Jefferson was in Williamsburg reading law, after graduating from William & Mary, and he proposed to her on what were essentially two occasions. The first one, he writes a letter to his friend the next morning about how awful it was and how he forgot everything he meant to say and this and that and the other. And the second one was similarly unsuccessful. Ultimately, when she later in the later in the next year got engaged and married Jacqueline Ambler from the Yorktown Ambler family. And Jefferson took that real hard. Had the first of it resulted in the first of his debilitating headaches, which is something that he had at stressful moments throughout his life up through his retirement from the presidency. And the second one is a story very much local to Albemarle County, in which after he's up in Albemarle practicing law, his friend John Walker gets sent on a mission up into New York. This is right a couple years before the Revolution, negotiating with Indians. John Walker's father, Dr. Thomas Walker, was major figure in the Western settlement and Indian relations and all of that sort of stuff, lived up at Castle Hill, just north of the Rivanna there, kind of across from Monticello. And anyway, John Walker asked Jefferson to look after his wife, and Jefferson took him a little bit too seriously and looked after her a little bit too carefully. And that later became came out in at the same time that the Hemings allegations became public during his presidency. These charges were made public, and it's one of the ones where he mentions in a letter to one of his cabinet members that of all their charges, this is the one that he acknowledges had substance to it.
So we're talking with John Kukla. The new book is Mr. Jefferson's Women, and we'll be giving away a free copy here at the end of the interview. So John, Jefferson was really, you know, we have learned that he was making sexual advances to this married woman, and it wasn't just one time. He did it repeatedly.
Evidently not. Yeah. The allegation that her husband wrote down had several instances. In fact, there's one that happened in their home, which was then a little bit north and west of Castle Hill, his parents' home, and subsequently that house was moved down to Milton or something. Buried in the footnotes are some attempts to try to figure out where the house now is, but some realtor will find that and turn it into a sales point.
So, and what do we learn about him from this from doing this? If it really upset him, he would have done it once and then felt horrible. But he went back and really tried to.
Yeah, evidently, he talks at the time about being very lonely. He had obviously enjoyed Williamsburg and the attractions of what we think of as now as a small town, but of course was a major colonial capital at that time.
Yeah.
With coffee houses and theater and sociability and stuff. And at one point he talks about being, kind of lonely up there in Albemarle practicing law and only occasionally getting to socialize. What is revealed in particularly in the Rebecca Burrell episode, and to some extent with Mrs. Watt, he seems to have an uneasiness about where he's not at ease with women, I think is a better way to put it. And this seems to be characteristic of his early life.
And he was never really all that close with his mother, was he?
We really don't know. Some people have speculated that there was a difficult relationship. I frankly, Coy, found so little evidence that I didn't just plain didn't make much of it one way or the other. I think what we can say is that as a boy, his father died, of course, when he was about 14 or 15, he spent most of his schooling up at the Reverend Maury's school in Northeastern Albemarle, almost to Louisa, and I suspect, in the company of Dabney Carr, his boyhood friend, and John Walker, his boyhood friend and classmate, who later married the woman he was making advances toward. And I think he was somewhat, although he had many sisters, I think he was, he came up in a kind of a, you know, boys school kind of setting rather than interacting all that much with his sisters at home.
We're talking with John Kukla. The new book is Mr. Jefferson's Women, and John will be here tomorrow in Charlottesville to speak at Kenwood, the home of the International Center for Jefferson Studies. The talk is at 3:30, and if you want to go, you need to know it's going to be crowded, and Monticello has asked that you RSVP online at Monticello.org. Just go to the website and register for the event, or you can call Monticello first thing in the morning and let them know that you want them to save you a seat. John, what do we learn when you look at the, what did you learn from studying his relationship with Maria Causeway, again, a married woman, when he was in France, in Europe?
Yeah, I thought I knew that story because I had written about it literally decades ago, and many people regard that as this wonderful romantic story. What's happened in the past several years, in the late 90s, is that Cinder Stanton and James Baer published Jefferson's account books, and they give us better documentation of where he actually was in at various points in his life, because although he went bankrupt, he monitored every nickel as he spent it, and so we now know, for example, in the case of Maria Causeway, that instead of people used to think it was like 7 or 8 weeks that they spent together in Paris seeing the sights and so on, and it turns out closer to being about a dozen days between the time that they meet and the time that he, you know, famously breaks
your
wrist.
You're kidding!
Such.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
so,
it.
So the you know, with that in mind, the relationship suddenly looks different. It's this one of several things that surprised me as I was, you know, coming to conclusions from my research. And then the other part of the Maria Causeway story that usually doesn't get told is the fact that, you know, when she left and went back to London, he wrote the famous Head and Heart Dialogue,
right.
Which lots of people have read and been fascinated by. It's a fascinating document. At any rate, the next year she comes back to Paris, and at that point, Jefferson is both busy with diplomatic business and also complaining that he never gets to see her except at, you know, at parties and in groups. And she's, in the second visit to Paris, she's hanging around with a bunch of Polish aristocrats, and I think there's almost a sense in which she's a little bit of a flirt and a coquette, and she's already crossed the ambassador from the United States off her dance card and now going on to other conquests.
That's great. So we're talking with John Kukla. The new book is Mr. Jefferson's Women. So before we get to Sally Hemings, tell it, and this could open that door, some other surprises, things that surprise you in the research, in looking at the relationships that Thomas Jefferson had with women in his life.
Well, I was surprised. I think the intensity of his feeling that women needed to be kept out of public life. And it's a sentiment that seems to have been increased or strengthened by his experiences in France, where he saw wives of you know, government officials or whatever, essentially lobbying and using their flirtatious skills and such to advance their husbands' careers and such, and as a matter of fact, at one point, right on the eve of the French Revolution, where he's working with Lafayette and other reformers, he writes a letter to Washington, who is just about to be elected the first president under the Constitution, and warns that that the women here could undercut all that the reformers are trying to accomplish, and essentially, you know, thank God this is over here. We got to make sure that the influence of women is not allowed to cross the Atlantic and
wow,
root in America. And that was there was an intensity to that really kind of surprised me.
Yeah. Now, what about Sally Hemings? What did you learn that really interested you about that?
My take on it, you know, that's a subject upon which, you know, people have strongly held and conflicting opinions. My own take on it is as expressed in the book, is that the relationship I don't think started in France, and I explain my reasons for thinking that it started in the mid 1790s when Jefferson thought he'd already outlived his father and thought that his he didn't have long to live, was retiring from Washington's cabinet to what he thought would be private life forever. And it was at that point that that I think that personally I think the relationship started. But you know, that's one of the things where you pays your money and you takes your choice. You know.
Yeah, yeah. Which would be interesting. She would be much older then, and not the the young teenager.
Yes, exactly.
The young.
She would. She was 21 at the time, and I think that to me that's very plausible. You know, as I say, that yes, this is immensely controversial, and I have no doubt that you know, the questions and answers tomorrow will have
it's going to be interesting.
Going to, you know, some of that sort of stuff and in whatever detail people want to go into. But
yeah. Would you agree? We had years ago, and we only got a couple minutes left here, but I did want to ask you this. About 10 years ago, I can't really remember. A mayor of Charlottesville at the time, Virginia Daugherty, suggested that we name a street in Charlottesville after Sally Hemings, and a lot of locals just were up in arms at the idea and said, you know, this is just some concubine of some rich white guy, and she didn't do anything. And I thought then, and I believe even more strongly now, that we have strongly underestimated Sally Hemings, this woman who negotiated her freedom and the freedom of all her children with the man who was job to negotiate treaties for America.
Yeah, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to tell anybody other community other than my own what they should name their streets, but. But I do have that respect for her. You know, we know so little about her as a person, and again, it's an area where people have made conjectures and that sort of thing. But among other things, as you point out, all of her children ended their lives in freedom, and she, for various reasons, was having to do with some technicalities of the law. Was never legally manumitted, but in essence, led her life until she died. And
given her time, as they said.
Yeah, given her time, exactly. And I think that's a remarkable achievement. I also think something that I hadn't fully accepted, I guess, a while back. But when you think about it, she was probably better traveled than most Virginia gentry women of the era, and had certainly witnessed things in Paris as far as what fashion or you know whatever that that her peers would have envied.
Yeah, amazing. Hey, John Kukla, thank you so much.
I really
appreciate it. I could go for another hour about this stuff. It's so fascinating
to
me.
We'll have a beer sometime and do that.
Absolutely.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit seavillepodcast.com for more.